Hello, this is Dan Lebatard, South Beach Sessions, as always brought to you by ZipRecruiter. They are our presenting sponsor on this week's episode of South Beach Sessions. We have Doc Emmerich. You will see a crispness and a clarity to his word choices that is a bit staggering. I don't believe you will hear a hiccup. I believe that he does this not one time pausing on speech, that this is the cleanest thing you will ever hear someone speak around here. He tells a lot of great stories, a long history in broadcasting, Hall of Fame broadcaster, one of maybe 10 names in sports history that people associate with the craft of broadcasting. He's very meticulous and very kind. Here he is, Doc Emmerich. So I hope I can ask this guy some different questions as he's on a book tour, and I hope he's not too bored by some of the questions he's been getting because he's making the rounds. I don't know, Doc, whether this feels like a eulogy. I don't know whether going around doing this book tour at the end of your career after deciding to call it quits after a half of century of incredibly professional work, how it is this has been for you emotionally. But let me start with the easy question of who calls you Doc and who calls you Mike?
Most of the people who knew me before I got a doctorate in 1976 call me Mike. And the people after call me Doc. So it almost is a dividing line that goes back 40-some years ago. I can't do math at this hour of the morning, so I guess it would be 44 years.
How do you feel these days as you make these rounds? I got to imagine there's a whole lot going on in terms of both happiness and sadness and relief as well. I imagine there's some relief in not having to do that daily preparation that becomes part of your routine, but is an unholy grind over five decades.
Well, I suppose it is. The one thing that I won't miss is the travel through airports. As that became, I think most people that do that for a lot of years, and then in the mail, they get a million mile card from one of the famous airlines, and they realize they've spent a lot of time on aircrafts. As much as it is fun for people who don't travel as much, it gets to be the only downside to the whole job, because the rest is fun. You get to enjoy the games. You get a good seat for the game. You get to work with some of the greatest athletes that there are. And all of that is an upside, but the travel was a downside. It didn't necessarily lead me to the end here, but it had a hand in it, too.
What is the perk associated with that kind of mileage? Like, I know I have a friend who does the same thing you do, and if he lands in Hawaii, there's a Porsche at the wheels of the airplane because he's flown so much. You must. I don't know whether you've taken advantage of any of these perks, but I would have assumed that someone of your stature flew more often with the team.
Yeah, no, team travel was ended with the Philadelphia Flyers in 1993. And I understood when I took the job covering the New Jersey Devils, we were not on the aircraft with the team. And that was okay because I understood it going in. So the rest has been commercial travel. But the upside to that is you do get the miles and you do get to take some trips if you want to. But the last thing you want to do in the summertime is to get on an aircraft. So I have all these miles. And Dan, if you want to go somewhere.
Really? You don't use the miles at all? You've got
You don't use any of them?
You've got a million miles. You've got all these free flights over 50 years and you don't use any of them?
Well, no, I give them away to some people. Every once in a while, there's an animal cause where somebody needs to, you know, get somewhere fast for a surgery or something like that. But by and large, no, we give them to family sometimes for trips that they want to make. But I don't have a great balance of them now, but for a while, I really did. And you do get upgraded to first class automatically. And then when I started work with NBC, they made sure I was there all the time anyway. So you get even more bonus miles that way. Things you didn't know that you would learn this morning if you're watching Dan's podcast.
Yes, this is something that, I wish that we could give people a way to watch the podcast, but they can listen to you, and I'm sure there are many people in this audience right now that are soothed by your voice because it's so familiar. Who do you regard, if I forced you to choose a name across sports, as the greatest craftsman doing what you do?
Doing hockey.
No, just sports. Just somebody that you regard, because I imagine you admire across the professions, because people think it's easy, Doc. They think that what you do is just getting to a microphone, and I think you do the hardest sport. Like, if I'm not mistaken, hockey's got to be the hardest, right? What's harder, doing hockey or having to fill all the time in baseball with these wide open spaces?
See, that's it. You hit on it. Because I think hockey is the easier of the four major sports to do because we don't have a lot of downtime. And if you do, we go to commercial or one of my analysts takes over and fills in the time. But with baseball, you have all of that time between pitches. Craftsman in the dictionary, Vin Scully's picture's next to it. And in my mind, I think he is the greatest I've ever seen at it because it is flawless. It rolls along and you are always going to learn something. And Vin came from an analog time. As a matter of fact, he was asked, maybe you were the guy who asked him. He was asked what the greatest innovation in sports broadcasting in the 20th century was. And he said the yellow highlighter. And I thought, what a great answer, because we all get these, we all get notes. And you can write on them and you can still read them. He came through that time and it was told to me, though I never watched him work, that he had all of these notes about baseball players on index cards that he kept in a box.
You would have never known listening to him the way that he told the story.
And that's the true beauty of having watched him and having listened to him. And sometimes he did simulcasts and you would never know. But it was always, he did one day, I was listening to one of his broadcasts and it was a Dodgers Giants game. And this was probably 10 years ago. And he started talking about Dodger dogs, the hot dogs. And the cameras started to follow kids eating hot dogs as he continued to weave this story. And of course, he could do it between pitches and he could do it after there were outs. And he would carry it over from a half inning in the middle of the game to the next half inning. And I wasn't going to leave that game, even though it was inconsequential and the score didn't mean anything because it was the middle of the game. I wasn't going to leave it. And he traced the history of Fenway Franks and the Giants hot dogs too. Only he could do that. And only he could be, went back that far. And only he was the historian and had it all. Probably on a note card somewhere or in his mind.
Well, you say he was a craftsman, but not always. And you say he was flawless, but not always. Listen to this story that Vin Scully told us about what he regards, and it'll give you some time to think about your most embarrassing moment or your greatest mistake on air, because here's Vin Scully telling us about the one he still remembers.
Back about my third year, about 1952, the Dodgers were playing Cincinnati, and Cincinnati had an outfielder named Lloyd Merriman. I'll never forget it. And Lloyd hit a ball foul, and my mind told me to say, hot shot, hit, foul. And it never came out that way. and everybody in the booth fell down, and I was absolutely mortified. And the reason I remember Lloyd Merriman, I started filling. He's a former Marine Air Corps pilot, saw combat in Korea. You know, I did on and on. That really, that had to be, considering how young I was, that was about it.
Doc, what was your hot shit foul?
Well, one of them was getting the clinching goal in the Stanley Cup overtime for Patrick Kane and not coming up with the fact that he had scored, and the fact that some of the rest of us up on broadcast row didn't get it either is no consolation because we're supposed to get those. But Eddie Olczyk pointed this out. Oh, gee, I think I have the quote right here. He remembered it. I did not. In a recollection that he had, we do these things called billboards, and we usually practice them before the telecast starts. And one of our sponsors was TurboTax, and that week, they had been hacked. And so when we were just fooling around, practicing the billboards before the game, I said something to the effect that TurboTax, a hacker's delight, and then went on to the next sponsor and the next sponsor. Well, normally we then do those live. Oh, and no. so it came time to do those live. And I had the card in my hand and I hear them playing them on the air. And I got on the IFB and I said, "What are you doing?" They said, "Oh, we recorded them." I said, "Get it off." Well, it was too late. And so there were a lot of apologies issued, and mainly by me and also by the producer in the truck, because he was so used to hearing me just read what was on the card, he didn't pay attention to what I was saying. But that was embarrassing for me because I was fooling around and didn't realize they were recording it and they were going to play it back that day instead of doing them live like they usually did. Pretty bad on my part.
I'm surprised that you, I shouldn't be, but I am surprised that you have notes as we talk here. And I'd like you to just take the best three highlighted notes and just read them to me so I don't even have to bother with asking the question that summons them. But I want to talk to you in general about whether there's an OCD there, whether there's a fear there, what it is that makes you be such a meticulous and copious sort of detail note taker for just about everything you're doing, and if it is indeed something that is a blessing at your work but a curse at home, if your loved ones find any of it maddening that you are a relentless note taker.
Yeah, it probably does, but my wife of 42 years has never complained openly about it. There are times when in the past when I've been watching games in my corner of the living room and the dogs don't care. And she's been watching a veterinarian show like Dr. Pohl or maybe Home and Garden Network on her side of the room. And these lineups and rosters are spread out because I'm an analog guy. She's sort of amused about it. And occasionally the dogs slip on it as they walk across to get a drink of water or something. But it's just the way I am. That'll be something I'll have to adjust to, and so will she. Some of those nights when I might have a game on just because I love the sport, but I won't be making notes anymore.
Can you explain to me how haunted you are? I don't know how much of a perfectionist you are, but when you give us that story about, you know, not naming the player on a Stanley Cup goal because you're professional and because you're particular, like, does that one stay with you for minutes,
yeah,
for hours, for days, for weeks, for years?
Well, when someone based in Miami asks me what my most embarrassing moment is, hopefully it won't. There won't be a new one in the next few weeks or in the years to come, but that's the one that stands out because, as Patrick Waugh once said when he gave up 7 to Detroit, the goaltender, famous Hall of Fame goaltender, I'm paid to get those. I'm supposed to have that. And had there been goal judges behind the net, he'd have seen it go in and he'd have turned the light on. And of course, the next fall, right on Halloween, I was due to have a game in Chicago. That was the first time I saw Patrick Kane. So I sat next to him on the dressing stall the morning after practice. And I said, "What did you see?" He said, "I let the shot go and it disappeared under the goalie's pad. I didn't know where it was. And I got closer to the net and I saw it was in. And the referee wasn't pointing at the net. Like, he didn't see it, and the goalie wasn't reacting, and I realized I saw it in the net, and my job was to sell it. So I headed to the other end of the ice, throwing my equipment in the air, and I was selling all the way. And some of the players on the Blackhawks team at the bench were afraid to come off the bench for fear of getting a penalty, and they actually reviewed it, but it was a joke, because by then it was... And all of us were chagrined. I got the S and the C of score out of my mouth, but then I pulled back for reasons I can't explain. But there it is. Hopefully, if you ask me that question 10 years from now, I'll be here. And I'll also be able to tell you that's still the most embarrassing moment.
Okay, so it's decades. So the answer to the question is it doesn't stay with me minutes or days. I don't have trouble sleeping. It stays with me for decades is the answer to my question.
Yeah, it will. It will because you call a lot of them that turn out okay. And when somebody asks you what's the one that didn't, that's the one that didn't because it won the Stanley Cup. And fortunately, it was television. So people could see it. But they couldn't see it really that well either and couldn't establish it because usually the referee points, the goal light comes on, and players celebrate. And only in the case of Patrick Kane did somebody celebrate.
Which is the one that you're regarding as the most okay then? I don't see you, beating your own chest very much with braggadocio. But when you think of a call that you regard as the most okay in your career, and I know this is a difficult question, but is there one that you're most proud of?
Well, I was most proud about being around hockey on the day that the gold medal game was played in 2010 in Vancouver between Canada and the United States. And the reason I was proud of it, to be around hockey, was it epitomized the best part of the sport in that it was the last minute, a one-goal game. The outcome was in doubt. The goalie was pulled. And Zach Parise scored late for the United States to force overtime. So the Zamboni goes back and forth, and everyone's wondering during the intermission, who's going to score, who's going to win it? And it turned out to be Sidney Crosby. My call was pretty simple. Crosby scores the gold medal to Canada. Nothing fancy, really. But perhaps learning from Vin in the call that he made on Kirk Gibson's home run, there is a reason that there's a crowd there, and there's a reason that there are guys in the truck and the cameramen. And for about a minute and a half, there was nothing to say other than show the elation and the despondency of players and the handshakes and all of that. And then we got interviews with both Crosby and Ryan Miller, who was the losing goaltender who played gallantly in the game. And they were both eloquent. And they both said such good things about competition, the Olympics, their team, the other team. And we got all of that on before the medal presentation, and 27 million people watched, which was a record. And a lot of them were not hockey fans. And I thought, what a great statement for the sport to have that kind of an exciting conclusion, and also to have those two guys be the ambassadors for the sport after the game was over. So I was never more proud to be around hockey probably than that day.
I want to talk to you a little about the craft and how it is that you sculpt it. What do you regard as the things you do most well?
I don't know. I know the things I do differently probably because I was coached to do this by when I was in graduate school. I used to go to every game I could, and I would go into press boxes and talk to other guys that did it. And one of the guys in Dayton, Ohio, who later did the Capitals for a year, named Lyle Stieg, said, if you can come up with different ways of saying the many things that are done this over and over again in a hockey game, that would help. If you always say dumped in from center ice when it's dumped in from center ice, you'll drive people nuts. So I tried to come up with different ways of saying the same thing. That is probably something that people say I do differently than others.
Hold on. Let me stop you there, if I may. Like, among them, which are the ones that you smiled to yourself on because you looked a verb up in the dictionary or you decided to go, whatever, spatulated in or ladled in? Or you've got so many of them. Like, which are the ones that you're like, okay, I'm even stretching the boundaries of the extreme here just because I'm looking for more colorful language?
Bill Guerin, who now is the general manager in Minnesota, was playing for the team I followed in New Jersey in 1995, won a Stanley Cup there and won one later in Pittsburgh. And one night it just came to mind when he came in the right side and he put on a move on the defenseman and broke by him. He didn't score on the play, but I used the word sashayed because it seemed like what he had done to get by the, and of course he heard about it. And then every time he would see me before a game, he said, do you think I'm going to sashay by the defense tonight? And I said, I don't know. Are you? But that's one that I recall that was pretty spontaneous. You don't plan these things out. I never had a list of words to use or anything like that. And as you do all these years and 3,700 games, you add to your vocabulary and sometimes you steal. You mentioned ladled. That was Gene Hart's phrase that he used in Philadelphia for a number of years for a puck just being rolled into a corner from center
Doc,
ice usually.
Doc Emmerich is a thief? Doc?
Oh, yes.
Doc, you're a thief? I think of you not as a plagiarist. I think of you as the height of the craft. And you're telling me all great performers do a little stealing.
Yeah, there was there's a phrase: the puck's dumped in, and so and so a certain team pours in after it. I was standing outside the Hartford Civic Center one night because it was a back-to-back game for the Whalers, and I was working the next night. I was at the hot dog stand that was outside, and they had the game turned on and turned up, and Chuck Caton was calling the Whalers game, and he said, and the puck is dumped in the last minute here, and the Whalers pour in after it. And I thought, well, that's vivid for radio. And so occasionally I have used that one too. No, I'm not saying we all steal from one another, but I'll admit to thievery.
I interrupted you. You were headed down a path to tell me some of the other things you do well or do differently.
Yeah, I leave it up to the audience to determine, because it's such a subjective thing, listening to an announcer to determine whether you like it or not. But the thing I like to do a lot is to, as I alluded to with Kane, is to sit next to them in the dressing room and find out stories. And a lot of times there isn't time to get them in, and so you just bank them and save them for a future time. And there was one that I got the night before, the Winter Classic at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, that I never got to use, so I'll share it with you now. I was tipped off by one of the guys in the clubhouse, an equipment guy, to ask Radek Foxa, who was number 12 for Dallas, he was one of their forwards, about his childhood in the Czech Republic and how he was able to learn to play hockey and how he did it living alone in a hotel. Well, this is a different story. So anyway, I said, is he still here? He said, well, I think he's maybe in back, because some of the guys had already showered and they were going to leave. They brought him back out. And I said, tell me what this was all about. He said, well, I had a single mom, and she gave me a chance to play hockey, and I had a skill for it. But it could be developed better if I left home. But I was only 11. And there was this guy that had a team over an hour and a half away from where we lived. So there's no commute, right? You can't commute to practice that distance. And so the guy had a connection with a hotel in that city, and Radek and his mom talked it over, and so she drove him to that city, and he had a room in a hotel. He got himself to school. He got himself to practice for 4 years. And then he came to North America eventually without knowing any English and wound up playing over here. And here he was in the Stanley Cup Final, and I was hoping to tell the story then, but he was injured. So I hope to tell the story when he raised the Stanley Cup. They didn't win it. So it's a different culture, I realize, but can you imagine? So I asked him, what was it like when the door shut behind you at age 11 in the hotel? He said, the first few weeks I was really lonesome. I guess. But what a magnificent story to have come through that. And he talks with his mom on the phone every day, as you'd expect. So I was hoping to give her name and to tell a little bit of the story if I had a chance. Didn't get the chance, but what a tribute to them. Wow.
So this is the first time you've told that story?
On the tour I have, but it never made air. It never made over the air. And I had hoped, it's one of those stories that you save because you want to make sure that you have time to get it in. And I had written it out for the Winter Classic, and I felt I could do it in 20 seconds, but there just wasn't the opportunity. I mean, you have flyovers, you have horses and explosions during the anthem and piglet races that are going along the sideline and everything else. And so you just don't have time to get all those things in. But what a tribute to him and to his mom.
I don't know how old that story is, Doc, but one of the things I marveled at in the middle of it is, and maybe I shouldn't marvel at this, you just sort of went into the data bank and said number 12 for Dallas. Is your mind filled with just random numbers? Can I go back to like 19? Seriously, can I go back to like the 1983? I imagine the Devils and the Flyers, you're probably going to know those numbers. But how far back can I go before I start stumping you on uniform numbers?
Oh, you probably could do it pretty easily. But one of the things I noticed during the pandemic, a lot of old games were on the NHL Network as well as on NBCSN. And It was a test for me because in some cases there weren't names above them, and in some cases you couldn't read the names, and so I was testing myself on that.
How'd you
the
do?
Other thing I
How'd
noticed,
you do?
Yeah, go ahead. 60%, 65%, something like that. The real test is to turn down the sound so that you can't hear the announcer call it. And sometimes the announcer was me, and I knew it then, but maybe I didn't know it now. The other thing was to watch all of those. I love baseball, and was to watch Major League and The Natural and Field of Dreams and all the over again. And I kept hoping that Vukovic could get some lumber on one of those Charlie Sheen pitches and that the movie might change, even though I love the fact that Cleveland won in Major League. You know, just get some wood on it, for heaven's sake. And don't spit all over home plate. You can't do that anymore.
Did you do many or any baseball games? Does any part of you wish you had done baseball if you love baseball? Because it's a totally different challenge.
Yeah, Bob Costa solved that for me. I had wanted to do at least one game of my favorite team, the Pirates, and he had learned that on an HBO program that Andrea Kramer had done. And he called me the next day and he said, next year we're going to solve that bucket list item of yours. And sure enough, he arranged for me to be in Pittsburgh for Chicago Cubs game. And he said, I'll do the first couple innings and get all the business stuff out of the way so that we get all the sponsored items out of the way. And for one night, the MLB Network will waive the impartiality rule and you can cheer for your team. And so he said, we'll set it up so that you can have a lifetime memory. And he did. It's as good a gift as any announcer could give to another. That happened that night. And the Pirates only won 4 games out of 19 that year from the Cubs, but that was one of them. So we won.
I'm curious about this because I remember talking to Bobby Bowden, who seemed to have a similar life attitude as you in terms of being pretty unrelentingly sunshine when you're listening to him. And one of the things that he said about retirement, he said, I don't want to retire because there's only one major event after retirement where people gather around for you. And so I'm wondering how much, you know, in deciding to retire, I don't know how much of your identity this has been, but how much of a struggle it was to let go at, what is it, 73, 74 years old?
Yeah, 74. I suppose in retrospect, it will probably seem like it was a struggle, but it actually came along pretty easily. I had been around people older than myself who would knowingly, they first of all would sort of flippantly ask, but not make eye contact and say, how long are you going to do this? And my immediate reaction when you're overly sensitive is, well, does it sound like maybe I should quit right now? But they would say, you'll know when it's time. And somewhere between the second and third round this year, realizing that NBC had protected me so well through COVID, it came to me that this was time. I'd done games on TV for hockey in the NHL for 40 years. It'd been 50 years since I covered my first NHL game and 60 since I'd seen my first game. And there were a lot of zeros that figured into it. And I thought, I have my health. And knock on wood, NBC has protected me here by letting me do the Stanley Cup final from home. This seems just right. And it still does a week or so later. So I'm hanging in there pretty well. Thank you.
Would you retire if not for the pandemic?
I don't know. It certainly had to have a part to play in it, I suppose, in that I was assured by the way NBC treated me that I was going to come through it healthy and come through the playoffs healthy, unless I did something wrong myself. They had protected me so well. So that probably had something to do with that side of it. But also in looking back, there was something that Brian Boucher said, the guy inside the glass on our telecast, he just happened to mention, Ken Dryden, the legendary goaltender, Hall of Fame goaltender from Montreal, and he wasn't old, he wasn't born when Ken Dryden had his rookie year. It was the rookie year, the first year I was covering games for an evening newspaper in the Pittsburgh suburbs, and that was 50 years ago. And I realized gee, I've flown on all these planes that you were talking about earlier, and I had cancer at one time, and here I am 50 years later, still loving to be around the sport, but I've had a good run. My wife's healthy, and we've got all the creatures that we are trying to make better for creatures in the world with our various things that we like doing. So this seems right, and so it still does.
Give me your list. Give the audience the list, please, of the creatures that you have.
Oh, we have two dogs, and we have six horses. The number of dogs and the number of horses varies up and down, sadly, because creatures don't live. Most creatures, unless they're minor birds, don't usually live as long as humans do. But we seem to wind up with rescues and things like that. And we like to, we don't support a lot of organizations that do animals, but we like to sort of anonymously do some things in our area here that help people that might need a surgery for their pet, or gas cards for volunteers that do a lot of rescue and things like that. Just, you know, quiet things that make things better for the creatures and the people that love them. Because we're people like that.
He's got a book out if you want to check it out, Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. It is available now. Are you or your wife worried about what you're going to spend your time pouring yourself into next?
No, I don't think so. We're going to do a few more things together than we had the opportunity to do. I used to always miss Thanksgiving dinner. Was sort of rushed, but it was for a good cause, because there always wound up being our Thanksgiving Friday afternoon game that was either in Boston or Philadelphia. And so it was always fun for that. But usually Thanksgiving dinner was quickly at noon, and then I had to catch a plane to make sure I was in one of those cities the day before. And Christmas, though, the NHL has never played Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Oftentimes there was a rush around the holiday too. So those will be a little different this year, and there won't be a New Year's Day obligation for me. And that took New Year's Eve. Those will be special occasions as well, and a little more time together to do that. But I have, referring back to my analog roots again, if you've ever seen The Storage Wars, I have one of those that the door goes up on, and inside those are all of those analog guides that go back through the years. And the proceeds from the book go to these various animal things that we have going on, as well as all of those guides and memorabilia inside. And a guide from the 1978 Atlanta Flames probably has no value, but a Calgary Flames fan might want that, as well as all the Calgary Flames guides that lead up to when they discontinued publishing guides, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, because that's a pretty long stretch. And maybe on some platform that I've yet to determine, they might want to purchase those. And then that's more money that I could put toward doing things for pets.
Do you have an estimate on what the contents therein are worth?
No, I have no idea.
None.
That's another thing that I'd have to organize and probably bundle them up. So here are all the Ranger guides. I don't know what they're worth, but I don't know if I'd put them up for bid. I'm not organized enough yet. But that's what I have to do when I unlock it and roll the door up, because they are all organized by year. So it's not a massive project that way, but it's just getting them in individual stacks.
One of the things that I like to do here, and I'm glad we were able to do this because you're a pillar of professionalism and really beloved, but I'm glad we've been able to expose you as a thief, a hoarder, and somebody who has great stories that he can't tell during a Stanley Cup game and has to tell them years later on a podcast. Like, just that we've exposed you as a reckless mess is something that brings me great joy, since you're so meticulous. Can I get three of the notes we didn't get to in front of you? I want three of the notes that you wanted to get to that are highlighted there, because I appreciate you're the first person I've ever known to come on to our show so prepared that he has notes that he wants to get to. And I should say this, because he is selling a book, and you just heard that it's a good cause that the proceeds go to. Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana became America's NHL voice. If you want to simply help the animals, not Doc Emmerich, but the animals, you can do so by purchasing that book. As I give him time, filibustering here, you're familiar with that, so that Doc can find the three stories he wants to get to, or the three notes that he wants to get to, that will make this interview really pop, this conversation, that maybe make some news if you can here, maybe say something something totally scandalous that will help us sell the book and the podcast. The floor is yours. Well,
I'm afraid, Leslie, you've gone to the wrong place for that. But I did have some, I only had some quotes here in the event I was asked, and it obviously failed because I had Eddie Olczyk's quote in case I was asked for the most embarrassing thing that I had done, and I couldn't pull it up very cleanly. So the rest all falls apart every once in a while. You know, that I'm asked about the embarrassing moment, and missing the Stanley Cup clinching goal is it. But Eddie recalled this, and I had forgotten about it. I don't know how I could forget about embarrassing TurboTax, because they were understanding and we first apologized and then tried to explain what happened. And then we apologized again because it was foolish, but they seemed to be good about it. So good for them. And so next April, if you need assistance with your tax return, we recommend TurboTax.
Let's end on that note. Doc, thank you for being on with us. Not enough time for a truly legendary career. I actually wanted to get a little more into the craftsmanship of what you do, because I'm curious what the last 10 years you got better at that you were bad at the first 10 years of your career.
But I can answer in 15 seconds.
All right, let's do it.
Being not as temperamental about misidentifying players. I used to startle John Davidson and Eddie Olczyk because I would misidentify one guy that was a 28 and I'd call him by the name of a 29 and I'd slam my hand down on my three-ring binder and it would make a lot of noise. And finally, I've got to the point where I only do it once or twice a game now instead of every time it happens.
Oh, wow.
So that changed a little bit. Okay. I decided not to be totally perfectionistic, but that's the one thing I noticed in the last 10 years.
Love it. Love that we're able to expose you not only as a hoarder, a thief, and someone who's recklessly forgetting, maybe because he's drunk too much, stories that he wanted to tell, and also that you are a rage-filled beast that your colleagues in a different time need to call human resources on. I'm very pleased to see this side of you. The whole job here is try to unearth things that are different about people that the audience thinks they know. So thank you, and I'm sorry if we've insulted you. Please, none of that rage sent our way, you thieving hoarder.
Hey, Leslie, should I now get up and walk away?
You should. You should storm out of the interview. Yes, storm out right in the middle of it. Maybe if you hit me with a bleep you on your way out, we'll get that that headline.
I won't do that.
Okay, Doc, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate
it. All right. Have a great day.
You too. That's it for South Beach Sessions. I don't know who next week is going to bring us. It might be someone like Big Boy. It might be someone like Ricky Williams. It will be someone who does not look at all like Doc Emmerich. We like to spread a broad net here in terms of the physical appearance and perspectives of the people on the show. So we will talk to you next week. Again, a reminder that if you want to support what we're doing around here, the Lebatard and Friends Podcast Network is somewhere you can get Stupidity, and That's What She Said, the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, Marty Smith's America, and Mystery Crate. Thank you for supporting the things that we do. Rate, subscribe, and review.